Blog Talk Radio.
Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, it's a tornado. Tony Pennycal. I'm not eating your icon tonight.
Yeah, Tony's a little, feel a little under the weather. He's got some learning.
Yeah, you got to understand, Rich. I'm not as young as I used to be, for one. Back in the day, you know, I would, train all day, fight, and then party all night, you know. Sleep. It was only time I ever slept was when I had class. But yeah, I was, back in Lock Haven, you know, a little bit younger. And then I don't go out much anymore, you know. I use my weekends really to relax, play with my dog, work out a little bit. Just fun stuff. Well, I decided to go out last weekend, had a good time. I would have been better, but there were some idiots at the bar that I felt needed a slap. So I wasn't feeling too well on Sunday. I just felt like I was coming down with something, but I worked out on Monday, and Tuesday, like all progressively day to day, I just kept getting progressively worse, and came home Tuesday night, canceled the workout, and then I was at work on Wednesday. I'm like, well, I'm feeling like shit, but I'm like, maybe, if I wear a sweatsuit and work out really, really hard, I said, maybe I can sweat everything out of me and feel better. So I'm working out, and I was telling my dad, I'm like, yeah, we're working the mental, be careful. I can't breathe through my nose, or I mean, you know, I'm going to snot spray you. And I just couldn't breathe. I mean, I was gasping dead because I just could not breathe. And then it was last night, I mean, I just, you know, I just regressed bad. But I was at work today. I didn't want to, you know, take the day off because I don't have much vacation time. And plus, I worked OT this week, and they had these stupid rules that if you take a sick day, your OT hours will get paid at straight time. And if I stayed late and came in early one day, if I had to come in there early and get up early, you get out damn early, I'm getting paid time and a half.
Well, we had a lot go on this last week in the combat sports world. Tonight we're actually going to have a boxing guest, even though there's a lot of MMA news to talk about. We have a amateur boxing guest, and his coach, the famed contender fighter Peter Manfredo Jr., his father is a trainer in the Massachusetts area, and he's got this real phenom named Toka Con Cleary, and he's got a 69-6 amateur record going into the Nationals this year for a chance to go to the 2012 Olympics in London. And so he's going to join us. Both of them are going to join us in a few minutes here. We're going to try to get them on around 8:15 because they're waiting for us. So might as well get them in as soon as we can. But we also had a big UFC event this past weekend, Saturday. I actually got to watch it from a beautiful high-rise, luxurious apartment here in Vegas. It's like a gated community apartment complex type of deal. And so you know, the show was pretty good, too. The main event was John Fitch versus BJ Penn. And even though Fitch was a favored fighter going in, they fought to a draw. And it was just definitely a very, very good show all around. Boston guy Jorge Rivera didn't do as well as I thought. He ended up losing by TKO to Michael Bisping. There's a little bit of controversy, a little illegal knee. But other than that, it was a pretty good fight, too. George Sotiropoulos lost to Dennis Seaver by unanimous decision. And one of our former guests, unfortunately, Chris Lytle, took a tough loss in a three-round decision against a guy named Brian Ebersole, who was from Australia where the fight card was. And interestingly enough, Lytle came out in the news this week admitting that he had a meniscus removed from his knee. So it was like a serious injury that he didn't want to be out there because he didn't want to, you know, take away anything from Ebersole's effort, you know, before the fight or make any excuses for himself. But now he's talking retirement because of it. It's a serious issue. So that's kind of tough to hear. He's just been such a great fighter over the years and been a multi-time guest with us. I think he's been on twice, so. You know, we've always been a big fan of his. Also on that card, Kyle Noak beat Chris Camozzi by rear naked choke in the first round. Ross Pearson beat Spencer Fisher by three-round decision. Alexander Gustafsson beat James Tehuna by submission in the first round. Mick Ring from the Ultimate Fighter series there, who had the knee injury and couldn't continue, came back and he beat Ricky Fukuda by decision. And on the other preliminary fights, we had Anthony Parrish versus Tom Blackledge. Parrish won in the first round by rear naked choke. We had Tiquan Zhang versus Jason Reinhart. Zhang won by submission guillotine choke in the first round. And probably one of the better fights on the card, even though Fitch and Penn got fight of the night, was Mark Hunt versus Chris Tuescher. A couple of big fat old guys just slugging with each other and just throwing all kinds of punches. Hunt won by KO, a vicious punch in the second round, almost a couple minutes in. And then finally, the first match of the night, Kurt Warburton beat Masij Jutusko by unanimous decision. And tonight we actually have a UFC event going on right now from Louisville, Kentucky, UFC Live 3, Sanchez versus Campman. And I have a couple of fights here that have already finished up. And we have Igor Pokrzyjak beat Todd Brown by TKO in the first round. Rusamar Palhares beat Dave Branch by submission in the second round. Dongyi Yang beat Rob Kimmins by TKO in the second round. Takie Mizugaki beat Ruben Duran by decision. And Shane Roller beat Thiago Tavares by TKO, or KO, punches. And, of course, the main event is going to be Martin Campman versus Diego Sanchez. So if you're not watching that, you know, you can check it out while you're listening to us. But it also, you know, one thing like we always talk about is how I watch the fights for free. If you go to MMA-TV.net, you can always watch the fights after the fact, too. They have the videos up until they get them taken down for copyright or whatever. Usually it's, you know, a few hours or maybe even a day that they'll be up there. And once they get taken down, they usually replace them with better new ones anyway. So check that out. And they don't even sponsor us, but I just like the fact that they do that. So I can give them shout-outs every now and then. As far as boxing goes, what happened over the weekend at that?
Pretty good fight last weekend that I didn't even know about until after the fact. I was able to catch some of the highlights. It was a doubleheader on Showtime, and the main event actually turned out to be pretty much a barn burner. It was a Brandon Rios who is known. He had the big win over one of the Peterson brothers a few months ago, and he's a young up and coming fighter, very impressive out there. But he's still gonna have a little bit hard time shaking the fact that he was one of the ones with Margarito a few months ago, lampooning Freddie Roach and his Parkinson's disease. So, I mean, but Rios is a fighter. There's nothing not to like about him, but it's hard to respect him after, you know, the thing with Freddie Roach. But he was in a fight. And the first few rounds, I mean, he was taking a tremendous amount of beating, and I don't have the guy, his opponent's name in front of me. And, of course, I'm going to brain freeze right now because it's so clouded up. But the first round, Rios was taking, I mean, right hand after right hand after right hand, and he was getting hit with everything, including the kitchen sink. And then he started coming back mid-round, wore his opponent down. Costa, his name was. And he stopped him in the 10th round. He got him in the corner, and he hit him with a pretty vicious right hand. Uppercut, and he was down. He was out before he hit the ground, and he just, you know, boom, he went down, which was very, very impressive. That was really it for the boxing over the weekend, you know, mainstream fight-wise. I'm going to pull up BoxRec and take a look, see if there's any other smaller fights that I missed that I could see. You know, being the rain man of boxing, I'll look up something in, like, Uganda somewhere and probably know one of the guys. Oh, a fight we did mention last week, obviously I didn't see it, it wasn't televised. We talked about Bert Cooper, you know, and his comeback. And you can tell really how far Cooper is really falling. He's 45 years old. It's only his second fight in 8 years. And like I said, I didn't even know he retired, to be totally honest. Because, you know, it seemed like he was fighting. And, like, these are small fights, small venues, fighting like nobodies. Well, his fight this past weekend was against a fighter named Gabe Brown, really just a trial horse. I gave all 362 pounds of Gabe Brown. And Bert only won by split decision.
What?
So, I mean, Gabe Brown is never going to be a world
beater. That was a workout tape. It comes with a 40-ounce.
Yeah, right. Well, like I said, and that was 16, 17 years ago when I remember my buddy saying, yeah, I used to see Bert running down the street, doing his road work, drinking a 40.
C9. No.
Might have been. Old English 800, you never know.
Well, I definitely, you know, I give him credit for just getting in there, of course. And, you know, I've I've been trying to make somewhat of a comeback to the image myself at my age, and I can relate to how tough it is. But you know, sometimes you just need the money when you're that old and you've got the experience. And whether it's MMA or boxing, you know, these guys they just go to what they're best at sometimes, and even if they're a little off, they can still hold their own in some of these matches. And, you know, it's more power to him for just getting in there at his age. Like I said, that's good stuff. But we also have some Oscar news, too, in the boxing area. I sent you that link about Mark Wahlberg.
I'm not going to do that right now.
You what?
I'm looking at it right now.
Oh, yeah. Mark Wahlberg has come out and said he wants to do a sequel to The Fighter, and there was a couple of Best Supporting Actor and Best Supporting Actress awards given out at the Oscars to the movie. One for the woman who played the mother of Mickey Ward, and the other one who played Dickie Eklund, his brother. And I was just really blown away when I just actually saw the movie not too long ago for the first time last
month. I haven't had a chance to see it yet. The one time I was going to actually go after the movies back in early January to see it was we got crushed with a snowstorm. So, yeah, I didn't get to go, and then procrastinating and goofing off and doing other things. So, yeah, I didn't get to go to that. But I've heard mixed reviews. I've heard some reviews. One guy I work with, I mean, absolutely loved it. I had other people that were like, I'll tell you who didn't like it at all was with the Larry Tornambi, the ring announcer that we had on a few years ago. Larry hated it so much because people that gave good reviews had to be on stuff stronger than what Mickey's brother was taking. Yeah, that's what Larry said. The one major criticism I've read from people in the fight game was, and this may be the reason they're looking at a sequel, the lack of Arturo Gatti. The fight scenes, because really, I'm having a little bit of a hard time breathing here, but Mickey Ward, the rest of his life, is going to be linked with Arturo Gatti, to be totally honest.
Right, well, that's the end of the story, that Mark wants to do the trilogy in the next piece.
Yeah, and that would be really good. I mean,
Let me tell you, we've talked about this before. Didn't I predict that? Don't you remember that I predicted they might do a sequel? You got to give him credit. Plus, you know, Mark Wahlberg there has been in the news because there was an article that I read that he was beating up all his friends and causing injuries because he just loves boxing so much now. And not only that, but he spent most of the money on the movie that he got paid for the movie. On personal trainers flying all over the country with him when he was traveling to just keep him on his game. And the other thing that's funny is he actually, to me, looks more like Gotti than Ward.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, he does. I think Mickey's a little rougher looking. No disrespect to him, of course. Maybe he looked more like Mickey younger in his career before, you know, he took a lot of punches and a lot of punishment. Mickey Ward was a guy that never met a punch that he didn't, or I'd say, never met a punch that he didn't like. And definitely a guy would, I mean, walk almost through anything. But that was a big criticism of the fact that the fight that they built it up more than anything in the movie was the fight against Shane Neary, which, yeah, was an impressive fight. It was for a minor title, not one of the big ones, but it was for a minor title. And it was one of, you know, Mickey Ward's obviously most impressive wins. Neary, I believe, like I said, I don't have a box check in front of me, was undefeated, I think, when they fought. And it was over in Neary's home country. It was in England or Wales. But obviously Ward was the out-of-towner. And from all the reports I've read about that fight, obviously the fight was, you know, a good 10, 12 years ago at least, that Ward was behind. The fight was close, but Ward, obviously being the out-of-towner, was behind. And on the one card was ridiculously behind before he pummeled Neary and ended up taking him out and knocking him out to win the fight. Then he had, I mean, but there was so much on it that they just didn't include from what I heard. Obviously, I haven't seen the movie. But his great fight in 2001 on ESPN with Emmanuel Augustus, fight of the year. That was Ward's first of three consecutive fight of the years. Obviously, the other two were with Gotti, the first and third fights. But then you got the trilogy. The trilogy, honestly, if a guy was writing a movie, I mean, it's almost like Sylvester Stallone took Doc Brown's DeLorean from Back to the Future, went into the future and watched some of the Gotti Ward fights, and then made up some of the movies for the Rocky thing, because some of the stuff you couldn't write any better. You look at it this way. These two guys are fighting. Gotti in the first fight was obviously favored. Ward was kind of brought in. And I just remember reading it in Ring Magazine. I'm like, oh, shit, Gotti and Ward are going to fight. That's going to be a good fight. I had two parties to go to that night, and I declined them both, and I actually used the other party as the excuse. My cousin, oh, I can't go to your party. I got to go to my college buddy's party. My college friend, no, I can't go to your party. I got to go to my cousin's party. And my dad's like, you got to go to your cousin's party for like an hour at least. Just show your face. So I drive there. I was like, you know, 45 minutes away. I drive there, and I'm like, oh, yeah, happy graduation, blah, blah, blah. Hey, we're all going down the shore to it. Do you want to go? No, I really have to leave and go to my friend's party, and I got to leave soon. Well, I jumped in my car. I did about 100 getting home. And I got home just in time the HBO broadcast was starting, and wow, what a fight. It was unbelievable. Now, in the ninth round, it should have been over. Right. They could have, I mean, Gotti, I don't know how he beat the cow, first of all. And then that punishment he took at the end of the round, and Buddy McGirt's about to throw the towel in. They don't stop the fight. It's unbelievable. That fight could stop in the ninth round. Maybe there isn't a rematch. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. They fight again in, about 6 months later. Gotti lands a great punch in the third round. Ward goes down, and he is all but out. I mean, he's getting up, and he's falling all over the ring. Anybody else, they stop the fight. Gotti's pounding him. Anybody else, they stop the fight. Next thing you know, Ward fighting back, and he goes to 10 rounds. That's drama enough as is. Now they got to have the third fight. And the third fight, you know, Gotti's winning, but it's electric, and you can just feel that it could change any second. And then Gotti breaks his hand, and it's like, oh, my God. I was in the crowd. I was like, he's hurt. You don't know what he was hurt from. And you thought he might have got hit with a body shot. No, and he's hurt. And Ward's hitting him, and Ward's hitting him, and this fight's going to be over. And Gotti survives. And then he's winning again, and Ward knocks him down. It's like, oh, shit, Gotti's down. And then it comes up to the 10th round, the final round. And I'll never forget Michael Buffer saying, this is the 10th? No, this is the 30th and final round. And if either of them first two fights would have been stopped, he never could have said that. And the guys hugged before the round started. It was just perfect drama. And then the fact that you had Ward ended up training Gotti for his last fight. Obviously, the thing didn't. I mean, if you were writing like the perfect movie, yeah, Gotti wins that fight, and obviously Gotti ends up retiring on a good note. And on the perfect world, Gotti's still with us today. But unfortunately, life isn't always perfect.
Yeah. Well, let's get to the next general.
By the way, that was a pretty good rant for being on laryngitis, doesn't it?
Hell yeah. Well, we're going to get the next generation Mickey Ward on here, probably. I don't know. But he's not even being better than anybody that we've seen from the New England area in a while. Topa Con Cleary and Peter Manfredo Sr. I'm going to try them right now. Let's get them on the call.
Hello.
Hi, Peter.
Yes.
Hey, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron. We got you on live here. Figured we'd start a little early.
Good.
So tell us a little bit about your protege here, Topa Con Cleary.
Well, Topa Con Cleary, he is 17. He just turned 18, I'm sorry. 18 years old. He had 70 wins and 6 losses. He can box. He can bang. He can consistently be in the gym in great condition. And he has all the moves. He has the makings to be, they call the 5-2 player in baseball. For everything he's 5-2, he's a 5-2 player in boxing. He's got a chin. He's got stamina. He's not afraid. He's got speed. He's got power. And he has agility and everything else to do with it.
All right.
Hey, Peter. Hi. This is Rich's co-host. This is the Tornado. I'm Rich's co-host. The one question I was going to ask you, are you looking to, because we have the Olympics coming up in about a year and a half, is that a possible goal for him, or are you looking to move him a little bit beyond that into the pro ranks faster?
Basically, here's where he's at right now. He won the National Golden Gloves last year at 123 pounds, and we had to move him up because he was having problems holding the weight and making the weight. So we moved him up after the U.S. Championships this past year where he came fourth. So this year, to qualify for the Olympic Trials, you have to come in the top four in the U.S. Championships, which he's done last year, or you have to win the National Golden Gloves this year, which he's done last year. So far, he's right where he's at. He just won the regional for the U.S. Championships. So now he goes to the U.S. Championships in Colorado. I believe that tournament, they came up with the dates today, are in June. They go toward the end of June of this year. If he can qualify for the trials, if he finishes within the top four. Also, last week, he won the New England Golden Gloves again at 132. Now he's going to go to the Nationals. We're leaving April 24th, the day we're leaving that week. They'll run the Nationals. And if he wins that whole thing, he'll qualify for the Olympic Trials. So, yes, we are shooting for the Olympics. And he's 18, so I'm trying to sit down with his mother we sit and we discuss this stuff together. And, you know, if he doesn't make the trials or even if he makes the trials, I don't think we're going to go for the Olympics in four more years and hang around. He has 76 fights right now. And I put him in with a tiny spot with Danny O'Connor, who was an Olympic alternate and last year. He's a professional now. He's 14 or 15. You know, he's in a spot on Showbox sometime in April. I mean, he spars with real good guys, all professionals and top-notch amateurs. I have to put them with real good professionals and bigger professionals because I can't get any amateurs that, can give him the work that he needs at this time.
Yeah, actually, we've had Danny on as a guest before, so it's kind of interesting.
Yep, and Danny's great work. You know, Danny pushes him. He's strong. He's bigger. He's stronger. But they're going four solid rounds with him tonight.
Cool. And he's there with you right now?
He's here with me right now. He's sitting here. Should I put him on speech or I just give him the phone?
Sure. Whatever works.
Oh, hold on. I'll give him the phone. Hello.
Hey, Joker. This is Rabble Rousing Rich here. How's it going?
I'm good. How's it going with you?
Good. Now, tell us what you got going on there in the gym and, what your plans are. What's your ultimate goal in the sport?
Right now, my trainer and I, we're just working hard. Make it to the Olympic trials. Right now, I just won the New England to make it to the Nationals in Colorado. So now the regionals and to make it to Colorado. So we're just working hard. I'm training hard, and so we're just waiting to get to Colorado now.
Cool. Now, how did you first get involved in boxing?
Excuse me.
How did you first get involved in boxing? When did you start?
A friend of mine was actually boxing before I was, and I was labeling him at the time, and he was going to the gym every day. I was sitting home doing nothing really. And one day he told me, why don't you come to the gym with me? And I was like, all right. So I came to the gym. I checked it out. I watched him hit the bag and stuff, and I liked it. So the next day I came back and introduced him to Peter. And me and Peter talked, and the next day we just took off from me.
Tony, you got anything?
Yeah, like one question I was going to ask, Peter was talking to us before you came on the air, he was mentioning some of the top guys that you've been in the ring working with. What is it like at your young age to get that good top quality work, and, how do you think that's going to help you, progress with your career?
With these guys that I have the chance, it's lucky for me to have the opportunity that I have to spar to. The fun that I get here because these are the top-notch professionals. So I'm lucky to have that chance. So by me working with these guys, it's going to get me nothing but better. So with me working with Danny and these other guys out here, he's going to get my confidence and skills up there more.
Cool. right. And do you have a favorite style or punch that you prefer?
Me, me and Montana, we practice the touch and go is a hook off the hook off the right hand and the jab hook off the right hand, and we have to be in a certain position to throw that. That's like my favorite punch. That's what we work on a lot.
Cool.
We call it a touch and go.
Touch and go. All right.
Yes.
New one. I don't know if I've heard that before, but sounds like a boxing term.
Yeah, I've heard stuff like that. I know the one trainer out of Philadelphia, Nazim Richardson, I think he always would say swim without getting wet. Basically, one of my old trainers, he was just like, he would just say to me, like, you know, don't get hit. Keep your hands up. Keep your chin down. Keep your ass off the canvas. He didn't use anything real stylish with me because I wasn't a stylish type of fighter.
And is there anybody, Toko, that you you really watch a lot of in the professional circles or otherwise that you try to, you know, fight like them or pick up things from?
Hey, we got Peter Manfredo Jr. I watch him fight every day. I try, because he got a real good jab. His jab is a real good jab. He always throws his jab to the shoulder. And Edwin Rodriguez, his combination is ridiculous. His combination is one of the best combinations. He's one of the best combinations for the action in a long time, too. And Daniel Connor, the speed. And there's another guy, Diego. I'm not sure about his last name, but Diego Pereira, he's a real strong fighter. He comes forward. He pressured me a lot. And those guys, I got different looks from when I see them, how they fight. I try to take something from them and put it in my category and try to go from me.
All right. And what would you say is the most important thing that you do to get ready for a particular fight?
Well, the most important thing is the running, the road work is important, and training hard, coming to the gym, putting 100% in every day. Because sometimes I'm still in high school, and some of my friends, they go out there, they're playing basketball, they want me to come with them. You have to stay focused, because if you don't stay focused, you miss a day at the gym. That day you miss, that might be the best important day you might need. And that you might learn more that day.
All right.
So I just stay focused on coming to dinner every day.
Cool. And as far as working with, the Manfredo family, both junior and senior, what's that like having that in your repertoire there to be able to rely on them to work with?
That's real good because Peterman, they're known all over. People know them. I'm still in high school, so when I tell people about coming to the gym, their eyes open up, like, oh, that's it. And by me going, I'm working with Pete, it helped me a lot because he showed me things that I see other trainers don't show the kids, and that makes me happy that I had the opportunity to work at home. And Junior, it's good seeing home how he worked hard, putting his time in the gym, and I try to learn from him, too.
Cool. And what do you personally like most about boxing? What's the thing that you enjoy most about getting in the ring and fighting?
I like the feelings you get before you get in the ring. The feelings, the nervousness, the butterflies, I'm addicted to that feeling. I just love that feeling before you get in the ring. So that's what I like about it.
Okay, along those lines, here's the question I always like to ask, all fighters and other fighters. When do you officially get the game face on? For me personally, I would show up to the arena and I'd be kind of laughing, kind of joking around, joking around with, some of the people I saw. Until the minute, and we usually did it, about an hour or so, before it was time to fight. Until the minute I got my hands taped. And I actually saw my old amateur coach a few weeks ago, and he still reminds you that he's still the exact same guy. He would sit down, and he would be like, and he was a joke, funny guy, good sense of humor. Mm-hmm. But when he sat down to tape your hands, you could see the look on his face was really intense. And he would sit there, and he would give you the instructions, and he'd say, listen, you know what you got to do tonight. And for me, I was a very aggressive kind of fighter, so... And I'll never forget the one speech he gave me. I was fighting a guy. It was in my home arena, and it was the last time I was going to fight in my home arena because I was graduating a few months later. And we didn't have a scouting on this guy. We just knew he was taller than me. And he said, listen, he goes, tonight, he goes, this guy is coming into your home in front of your friends, in front of your family. What I need you to do tonight, as soon as that bell rings, go out there and punch him right in the mouth. Don't let him set his feet. And I remember just looking in his eyes as he's taping my hand. And I was like, you know what? The time for laughing's over. It's go time. That's now for you. When does your game phase come on?
My game phase come on when around before my fight, Peter and I do pass in the corner, and after the pass, he told to me it's time to go to work. It's time to let it all out. It's time to go in and give it your all. Because if you don't, you're gonna come over the L. So before that, before we're in the ring, I told him after my game phase come, it's time to go to work. It's time to play no more.
Now, I think any of us that have followed the fight, you've seen, Peter on TV, either working his son's corner or even when they, did the show The Contender with his son Peter Jr. on there. And Peter seems like he's a very intense guy. Is that the way he is when he's getting you ready to go? Does he show a lot of intensity? Does that fire you up?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I like that actually because, when he's in the corner, I can hear him more than anybody else. He's yelling, he's giving me instructions, because I need that, because some coaches are too quiet. I don't really hear some coaches when they're in the corner. So Pete, he's like the perfect trainer, because he yells, and he makes sure he gets his point out there, so I can understand what he's talking about. So that's good sometimes when he's telling me, when he's yelling at me in the ring, so I get the information and get it going.
Right.
Now, is there any is anybody that growing up was a real role model for you and kind of has been helping you along the way outside of the gym?
When growing up, I had two gentlemen, Corey Brown and Dave. Me growing up, they were always there to help me out when I didn't have something. They were there by myself sometimes. So those two guys were there for me as I was growing up when I wasn't part of boxing at that time.
And as far as the professional ranks, do you want to end up there someday, and you're gonna make a career out of it for sure?
Oh yeah. Right now, I'm not really thinking about professional right now. I'm thinking about the Olympics. That's the main thing in my mind. But of course, professional is something that we are eventually gonna go and do. We're gonna do that and take it out, and we're gonna do our best at that too. We're gonna work hard to become a world champion. That's the plan. That's the plan. That's the goal right here. Become a world champion. Everybody want to make it to the Olympics, but the Olympics is not the 100%. When you turn pro, you have to take it to the next level and become a world champion and get yourself known out there.
Right. And there's been a lot of controversy, too, with the type of boxing that's in the Olympics compared to some of the other amateurs and professional ranks and the scoring and everything. So it's I imagine it's going to be a completely different way of preparation for that, too, right?
Yep. Yeah, they've been doing a lot of talking about how they're going to change it up. They're talking about changing the heavy up in the Olympics. So I don't really know what they're doing right now. We just hear a bunch of different stories right now.
Right. Yeah, I know there's just a crazy type of scoring. I've never seen any other type of boxing with the tip of the gloves being white. You know, you got to land a certain punch a certain way to a point. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous, but it's got to deal with it.
Yep.
But what's it like in the gym? I mean, what kind of gym do you work out in? Is it old school, kind of falling apart? Is it a brand new facility? What's it like?
The gym is like my second home. Because it's like we just got to repaint and everything. It's lovely. You guys should come and check it out. We just fixed it up and everything. This is like everybody's close. We're all like family. You know, we help each other out, and even outside the gym, we try to help each other outside the gym, and he try to work with us, come in and out the gym. He calls us on the weekends, check on us. Not even the other trainers in here. We're all close, so they all help each other out to help out the kids and stuff.
Cool. Yeah, that's always important. I mean, when I actually coached a little while up at college, and we actually had a bunch of freshmen in military school who were on the team that I coached. And so I took it upon myself to have a big party for them at the end of the year and, treated them like equals where, most of the day they're getting yelled at and treated like crap. So, you know, that's a real important thing to have, is that that camaraderie. And actually, one of the things that I, when I always ask that question, you know, what do you like most about the sport, that's one of the most common answers I get from boxers, is just the camaraderie that's involved in the sport. You know, you just become good friends with anybody that you work with or fight against, and, you know, it's something you don't see in a lot of other sports.
Yeah.
But as far as looking forward to this next tournament, you got the National Golden Gloves, right?
Yes.
What do you know about any of the other opponents that you're going to be facing, and what are you doing to prepare for those guys?
Well, 132, they're pretty difficult division. We got a lot of different fighters that just move up in the weight. I actually went to Colorado not too long ago, and I was following the number one ranked kid at 132. And it was pretty good because I got the chance to see different styles and see how these guys move in the ring. So it was good for me. So I'm pretty excited about it, and I'm ready to see what they got for me out there.
All right. You got another question, Tony? Be quiet.
All right, man. Actually, that's what I was going to ask. You know, I'm looking forward to the next big tournament coming up, and I was just going to wish them good luck while I was asking.
Yeah, that's actually, the Colorado thing is kind of interesting, too, because that's where I started my college career, was in Colorado Springs at the Air Force Academy. I did a year out there. So I can relate to this. Actually, the Air Force Academy coach for a while was one of the best in the business, and they used to always win the Nationals every year while I was there. So, you know, it's definitely a good place, and it's like the Olympic Training Center is there, too, because of the high altitude. It's great for running and working out, and, you know, it's just it's a hotbed for boxing because of that, too. So it's good that you've been out there already. You know, that's a big step to take. I can remember, you know, the first week of basic training out there and trying to run in that. It's rough.
It's intense.
Yeah. We had one guy, unfortunately, too, for us that they had the PT test and then they had the super PT test. And he was, like, on the top 10 plaque for scores in the super PT test. So we'd be running in formation and he'd be literally running circles around us.
Oh, wow.
But one of the best things about working with that guy is that he taught us every type of sit-up, you know, stomach exercise you could possibly think up. And one of the things that was the best aspect of my training for the boxing club that I started at when I went to my other school, Norwich, in Vermont, the ab workout. We used to do the ab workout half an hour at the end of practice every day. And it was such a popular thing, we had like 20 girls show up for practice one day specifically for the ab workout. So we actually got a lot of girls involved from that, you know, back when women in boxing was just kind of, you know, unheard of and not as popular as it is today.
Yeah, that's good.
But as far as your future goes, do you have any ultimate goals? Well, I already asked that, but do you have any immediate goals that you really want to push hard for? And what's the general perspective that you've got going into this these tournaments coming up?
I'm just hoping to get out. This is my last year in high school, so I'm trying to graduate. I'm going to graduate this year, and after high school, we're going to work harder and hope. And I'm going to try my best. Work hard, and when we get to the tournament, we're going to get my name out there, try to do the best I can to try to win this tournament out there. That's the goal, and that's the plan right now, to our best at the tournaments.
Cool. Now, as far as outside the ring in the gym, do you have any hobbies or interests that you like to pursue?
I play basketball outside the gym. I play basketball. I used to play football when I was younger, but I did football for 6 years, and I quit that. And I did basketball for school for a year, and then that's when I got involved with the boxing. I thought I was going to play basketball.
Yeah, that's a really good sport because of all the sprinting back and forth, you know. It's
yep.
It's got to be good for you.
Yeah.
One of the things that, like you said earlier about the road work, too, I'll never forget the 1 year that I got to compete in intercollegiate. boxing ranks with Tony, actually. Tony was in the same circles as me when we were in college. We were the same year in college and same weight class, believe it or not, but we just never fought. And, you know, one of the things that really turned my whole competition career around at that point was we used to run 7 miles every Tuesday through the hills of Virginia when I was on an exchange program with Virginia Military Institute. And when I was up at Norwich, we just had a club team, so we just boxed each other on campus. But that was my first opportunity to box intercollegiately, and I can tell you that, you know, that's a good answer to say, you know, that's the most important thing, because it really can be. You know, and whether it's long distance or the short sprints that you do in basketball, the more you run, the more you just are able to breathe. And, like, even when you're getting hit, to be able to take a deep breath sometimes.
That's one of the important things. Because Pete and I work on breathing too when we're throwing our punches, and we gotta breathe and try not to hold your breath when you're throwing your punches. You gotta always breathe when you're laying your hands up, and relax and stay relaxed and everything else.
Right. All right. Well, we pretty much exhausted our questions here, unless Tony has anything else.
No, that's all I got, man. I don't have much of a voice anymore.
All right. Well, I don't know if you want to put Peter back on. We'll just sign off. And thanks for talking to us.
Hello,
Peter. All right. Well,
yeah.
That was pretty good. We got a lot out of him. Just wanted to give you guys an opportunity to, you know, maybe give us a final thought or give a shout out to.
I really appreciate that you guys are giving us this opportunity to get out there and expose the kids' name a little bit more. You know, I'm hoping to let the kids take them to the next level and win this national tournament again this year. He has two qualifiers coming up, and if he makes one of them, makes the Olympic trials, that's when he can really shine and either make the Olympic team or, you know, we can have a professional career with a top-notch promoter in the country. But I want to, again, thank everybody who helping us. You know, I don't think his mother just adopted him a few months ago because she keeps him on the street. And not that he's not on the street, but he's a real good kid. I wish that people could really see him because the kid's a top-notch kid. He's not in trouble, and he's very polite. And, you know, he's not cocky. He's not punky. He's just a nice, nice kid. You know, anybody who's met him can understand exactly what I'm talking about. So maybe someday you guys can meet him in person and also see him fight in person, and you can change your minds and see him, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about and why I have such high hopes on this kid, not only as a boxer, but as a great human being.
All right, well, it's been a heck of a while since we've had actually any amateur fighters on the show at all, so, you know, we already recognize how good he is by just having him on, and definitely appreciate what you do for not only him, but just for the sport of boxing with your son and the gym, and from what Toka told us, it's like a family environment there, so I'm sure that you're helping a lot of people stay out of trouble and do something constructive with their lives, so more power to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Okay.
Hey, Peter, thank you. Have a great night. Hey, Rich, you still there, man?
Yep, I'm still here.
That was a good interview with both of them.
Yeah, it brought back a lot of memories. Talking about the amateur level, and yeah, it's gonna be great to watch how he develops. You know, it's very rare for a guy to have 70 wins in the amateurs like that.
And that's the thing that, you know, I mean, you do get a lot of fighters, and some of them do burn out at a young age because they have too many amateur fights. They go out there, they might have, these two guys like 300 amateur fights anymore, and it's too much. Because they're fighting a lot, and then by the time they get into the pro ranks, a lot of them are burnt out. I'll give you a great example of that is, do you remember David Reed, who was the Olympic gold medalist in 96?
Right.
David, I met him in Philadelphia. I didn't know his trainer very well. I met his trainer, Al Mitchell. But Dr. Cox was the alternate team manager of the 96 Olympic team in Atlanta that had guys like David Reed, Antonio Tarver, Floyd Mayweather, you know, obviously a lot of really good fighters on that team. Vargas was on that team, Fernando Vargas. So you had a lot of really good fighters, and David Reed was, you know, the only gold medalist. Came from behind and knocked the Cuban out in the third round to win the gold medal. But you know, by that time, Reed had had so many amateur fights, and then he had to work so hard to get to the Olympics, and then he had that eye injury when he was in the amateurs, and they had to get surgery. They could never fix that droopy eye. By the time he turned into a pro, he won the title in like a 14th pro fight, but actually, you could tell he was on the downside from there. I went to one of his earlier fights, and he had knocked out former world champion Simon Brown, who was moving up in weight. Knocked Brown out cold. Brown was on the ground, like, you know, throwing punches. And had Brown on the ground for about 5 minutes. Reed looked great. And then he won the title, and I was like, okay, he won the title. Wasn't a great fight, but okay, he won it. Then his like, first defense was in Atlantic City, and I decided to get into it. So I went down with a couple friends of mine, and my dad went down. And he didn't look good at all. I mean, he was fighting a guy named Kevin Kelly from Australia. And he didn't look good. I mean, he won the decision, but he had to come off the canvas to do it. And he just didn't look good. Then he stepped up to fight off Felix Trinidad, you know, about 9 months after that. And he was beating Trinidad, had him down. And then Trinidad opened up, starting, like, I think, around like the 7th, 8th round. And he put, I mean, a frightful beating on Reed. And Reed never recovered. And I think a lot of it was the fact that he was burnt out. Too many amateur fights. I mean, it was in the hundreds. And then too much too soon as a pro. And last I heard, like, he had fought, you know, it was one guy in his last fight, he was trying to make a comeback. The guy was like 10 and 15 and beat the shit out of Reed, knocked him out. And I met David about a year or so later at Fight the Blue Horizon. And I was talking to him, and he was slurring all over the place. I was like, I said, I was one of Dr. Cox's fighters from Waukegan University. And he looked at me, and I was like, Dr. Ken Cox, he was the manager of your 92 team, heavy set guy. Oh, yeah. I'm like, this is only like 5 years later. You're not going to forget a guy like Dr. Cox. And, I mean, Rich, how many times have you met Dr. Cox?
A couple times, actually. He was the one that facilitated my test to be a coach.
Right. And how many years ago was that?
Oh, geez. That would have had to be maybe sophomore year in college. So,
and then, what, so around 97, 98?
96, 97, maybe.
Okay. And do you still remember Dr. Cox?
Oh, yeah, of course.
And you only met him a few times. So that's showing you right there that David Reed, well, you could tell, was a little bit, you know, suffering from a little bit of pugilistic dementia right there. Too many amateur fights, too many beatings. I mean, he didn't have a whole lot of pro fights. I think he only had, like, 20-some.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting looking back. But, you know, even having a few amateur fights and, you know, coming back and trying it out again. Wearing headgear or not, you know, you start boxing again, and, you know, you gotta be made for it in a lot of ways. You know, you gotta have a hard head, like they say, sometimes, because, you know, you get your brain knocked around there, and even just one little sparring session can throw you for a loop. Like, the last time I sparred, my head hurt for a few days. And it wasn't necessarily hurt, like pain, but it was just kind of like, I just felt like a numb feeling.
Like a real bug dog kind of pain?
Yeah, it was just kind of like a, you knew something was going on up there, but it didn't hit the nerve ending that gave you the pain. It just kind of was just like, whoa, you know, you need to take it easy for a little while. But yeah, you know, that's the thing that people don't realize, that the, you know, you go in there and you compete, that's one thing, but even when you're sparring, you know, you're taking these punches to the head, and even at 50%, it's just like the debate we had over boxing versus MMA. Boxing, the real damage comes with the repeated hits, rather than the, you know, the tight hits, the knees and the elbows that you get in MMA. It's just the exposure to that constant, you know, slapping around of the brain that gets you in the long run. So, you know, you always got to be wary of that and think about that kind of stuff when you're in that sport. Prepare for the worst sometimes. But moving forward on the show here, that was obviously a great interview. But we got a lot to talk about in the boxing, MMA, and even a little bit of wrestling stories here that I get in my email. Like we just discussed the sequel there with the fighter. I don't know where I was going with that.
Well, I was going to say the one thing we got a title fight this weekend, which I think is going to be a title massacre between Saul Alvarez, who's a very impressive young Mexican fighter with red hair. He looks more like he's Irish than Mexican, but south of the border. He's fighting Matthew Hatton, the brother of Ricky Hatton, and who is, Matthew's not out to be totally honest in Ricky's class. And I think Alvarez would have beaten Ricky. I don't expect this fight to go to anything more than 4 or 5 rounds before Alvarez walks out with the title.
Right. We also have sort of an interesting story here about Mike Tyson. I think we had mentioned this briefly before, but
yeah,
Mike Tyson is going to be back on TV, not in a boxing ring or even a boxing documentary or anything related to boxing. He's going to be on a show on the Animal Planet about racing homing pigeons. As we know, the whole reason why he got into boxing in the first place, or at least the first major incident that he had to show him how dangerous he could be, was when somebody ripped one of the heads off one of his pigeons that he used to raise. But it's going to be called Taking on Tyson, and it's going to be on Animal Planet. And he says, pigeons are a part of my life. It's a constant with my sanity in a weird way. This is just what I do. If I'm lucky enough to die an old man, I'm going to have birds.
Hey, he's got something, you know? I mean, from a guy that has a pet, you know, they can offer you very, very, you know, peaceful and tranquility.
Yeah, and like my dad always raised fish. So, and there was actually a study done, I think, years ago where they said that, you know, just watching fish in a tank relaxes you. So he had a high stress life as a detective and police officer growing up in the 80s, and that's when he had his fish room just full of fish. He used to sell the exotic ones, and it was a big deal to him, and he still does it. He still's got some fish, not as much as he used to, but he's still a big passion in his life. You know, some people, they just need that balance.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I know, just personal experiences. Usually an animal, but I'm a very, I have trouble trusting a lot of people outside of, you know, my own, you know, family. And, a lot of people, they'll screw you over if they get a chance. You know, we'll never do that.
Right, exactly.
That's what I'm like, you know, pigeons.
The worst you can expect is when you turn your back on a dog, you know, you might get mounted. It was kind of funny because I'm here at this place in Vegas, and this guy's got 3 dogs, and there's 2 huge dogs. One's a pit bull, one's like a big, huge brown lab, and I've never seen a bigger dog, actually. But then there's this little scruffy poodle-looking dog. And the other day, the little dog jumps on the biggest dog's leg. And he's
just
always
start to play. That's what poodle dogs do. They always start shit.
Yeah. His main move is trying to bite the legs off the other ones when they're trying to attack them.
Yep.
The Tyson documentary premieres on March 6th at 10 p.m. on Animal Planet for anybody that wants to watch that.
It should be entertaining or interesting, in the least. Because you never know what Mike will say. As hopefully for them, they'll have some censors. And, you know, I guess the show is going to be taped, not airing live.
Right.
Good for them. Because you never know. You never know what's coming out of Mike's mouth.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a six-part docudrama is what they're calling it. But, it's something that's...
You never know what Mike would be thinking.
Another story, the parent company for SureDog, called Crave Online, they're going to partner with Ring Magazine, his parent company. Ring TV is going to be the new deal they're going to be working on. We'll offer more in terms of news, interviews, videos, photos, and live streaming fights, turning Ring TV into a full-service online boxing destination.
Cool.
As we know from SureDog.com, it's probably one of the most popular MMA sites out there, even though there's a lot of accusations that, you know, they've got too much favoritism towards the people in the UFC and there's some other stuff. But basically, it's still one of the top dogs, no pun in the sport for online stuff. And now that they're going into boxing, I mean, that's obviously a big investment in boxing, and goes to show you that, like we always say, the sport is definitely not dying. The editorial team is going to expand to include Michael Rosenthal and Doug Fisher, leading boxing journalists, both of them. And they also run SureDog and Fight Hype. So, as I said, you know, they're already in the business pretty hardcore, and now they're getting into the boxing side of it. So that's going to be exciting. We'll have to keep an eye on that. But other than that, you know, we got a whole bunch of MMA fights coming up. We haven't really looked at BoxRec yet for the schedule. But trying to keep it short again this week because I got a lot to handle here. I'm still out in Vegas, by the way. I didn't really mention that.
Right.
But, you know, speaking earlier about not being as young as we used to. Geez, if I was 10 years younger being out here, I'd be partying my face off.
Oh, me too.
You know, I haven't even really gone out once to any clubs or anything to go drinking. Been to a couple casinos, and I spent maybe 5 minutes at a slot machine. But I think the closest I came to doing anything party style was when I was waiting for my buddy to pick me up at one of the casinos after I went to meet one of the people that I was interviewing out here. And I'm sitting right outside the TGIF where they had some karaoke going on. And I was thinking about going in there and hanging out, but I ended up not doing it. You know, I guess that's a sign of me aging too much. Back in the day, I would have run right up there and started singing. And everybody would have covered their ears. But, yeah, I'm still out here. I'm going to try to make the most of it. Next week, I'm going to work to try to get in touch with Robert Guerrero's camp. He's out here training for a fight with Michael Katsidis. So it should be a good fight. And I want you to see it. I guess he's kind of being secretive about where he's training, so not a lot to reveal, you know, which gym he's going to be at. But I'll hopefully be able to talk to him and interview him and, you know, find out what I can about how his camp's going. And I don't know what's going on as far as boxing and MMA the coming
week. Well, you know, Chrissy Martin, I think she has a fractured bone, I think it's really where. But her fight on the fight card on Cotto, I was at the Margarito, Cotto Mayorga has been postponed.
Okay.
Kelly Pavlik is fighting on that card, you know, coming back after he had that stint in alcohol rehabilitation.
Cool. I hadn't heard that, so that's great.
Yeah.
because everybody was saying they don't even know if he's going to come back.
What's going to hurt him now is Bernard Hopkins laid out the game plan to beat him. You know, it's like sometimes you have a game plan to beat a certain fighter, or a blueprint, I should say, and one fighter might not perfect it, but another fighter will. And a perfect example is Felix Trinidad for the longest time was, devastating. As I mentioned earlier, he beat the shit out of David Reed, knocked out Fernando Vargas, knocked him down like six times during the course of the fight. William Joppy, he smashed. He was beating the hell out of a lot of guys. We had that fight against Oscar De La Hoya, which I still think De La Hoya won. But De La Hoya was like, you know what, I'm not going to stand in front of him. And I'm not going to try to trade with him. I'm going to use for superior speed. And he did. And like I said, I thought De La Hoya won easily the first eight rounds of that fight. And then he coasted the final four rounds. Actually, he flat out ran away. And he lost the final four rounds and ended up, getting robbed out of the win. So you have this perfect game plan that De La Hoya perfected. Trinidad can be beat with angles, footwork, and boxing. Bernard Hopkins saw that, and Bernard said, you know what? I'm going to bait him like I'm coming in to street fight him, and I'm going to box him. And that's how Bernard and then Winky Wright ended up beating Trinidad pretty handily. Bernard used the same game plan against Kelly Pavlik. Because Pavlik and Trinidad were almost the same kind of fighters. You know, slow-footed, but amazingly explosive. But they were guys that if you gave them angles and used boxing ability in a jab, they couldn't touch you. So, you know, a lot of guys are thinking, you know, Kelly's just going to put pressure on, he's going to work. You know, Bernard doesn't have the leg that he used to. I mean, Bernard even fooled me. And I've been a big fan of his for years. That's what he did. Now, Sergio Martinez did pretty much the same thing. Pavlik was coming back, and I thought Pavlik was starting to pull ahead when he got cut. And then Martinez, you know, pretty much raked him over the coals over the last three or four rounds and won the decision. But you got to see how much Kelly has left, and now if he it has become, quote-unquote, predictable. You guys figured him out now.
Yeah.
You guys know the blueprint on how to beat him.
Well, yeah, it's going to be interesting, but I don't know. Do we even know what weight Pavlik is coming back at? I mean, obviously, out of the
super middleweight.
Super middleweight. And what was he last fighting at? Was that the same weight?
Well, his last fight was a middleweight title fight back last April. So that was obviously 160.
So he's only gone up to super from regular?
Yes, 8 pounds.
That's not too bad. So he's obviously.
It was a rib injury for Christy Martin, by the way. Let me take a look at something. I just added up on my computer. Okay. Kelly Pavlik, he was supposed to fight. Oh, shit. Who the hell was it? The original opponent they had to pull out, and I knew the name, too, because of either injury or something. So now they're putting him in against a guy who's undefeated, but he's. Nobody knows who he is. He's a Texan by the name of Alfonso Lopez, 21-0 with 16 knockouts. Pavlik is 36-2 with 32 knockouts.
That's a huge fight for him coming off the freaking bench. Jeez.
But we don't know. I mean, like I said, like a few years ago, I mean, records don't always matter. It depends on who you fought. I mean, you get guys that are, like, really, really good with, like, you know, mediocre records. Or you get a guy like I was on the Blue Horizon a couple of years ago, and the guy was 35-0 with 33 knockouts. And a friend of mine was like, are you going to cover this fight? And I said, no, because the guy he's fighting is going to fall over the first time he gets hit. The guy he's fighting was like 6'7". I turned to my friend, I said, watch, I have one word written down. I'm covering this fight before it starts. The word was timber, and that's what happened. Well, when this guy stepped up in class a little bit and he fought a guy with a 500 record but was a good fighter, he was getting his ass kicked, and he was lucky that the fight was only six rounds. Because when you're into your 35th fight and you're only fighting six-rounders, you're showing something's wrong. And that was the effect. I was watching some old Tommy Morrison fights on YouTube last night, And at the one time, he was like 20-something, no, like so many knockouts. And he was 28-0 with 24 knockouts. And they're like, yeah, 21 of those fights have ended in two rounds or less. And I'm like, now, and I was only 14, 15 at the time. I was a big Tommy Morrison fan because he was in Rocky V and all that. But I was like, you know what, that makes sense. The fact that Ray Mercer was able to beat him because, you know, Tommy never got in there when he was, you know, had to come back from adversity.
Right.
You know, everything had been too easy. Even when the guy stood up a little bit, you know, he ran out of gas and he eventually got pole waxed. for lack of a better term, you know?
Yeah. Well, looking at the Sure Dogs schedule coming up, we do have a lot of MMA action going on this weekend. Obviously, we talked about the Sanchez versus Campman card going on right now. And Joe Stevenson just lost on that, by the way. Let's check here. To Danny Castillo by unanimous decision, and also they just had a fight. Ciryl Diabate beat Steve Cantwell, also by decision. But other than that, tonight we have like 20 or 30 different events going on this weekend, all the way through to Sunday. But the big ones, all the big ones are there. M1 Challenge 23 is going on Saturday in Moscow, Russia. We have Strike Force going on Saturday. Feijal versus Henderson in Columbus, Ohio. Big Strike Force event there. And then with King of the Cage Future Legends out here in Las Vegas, I might even try to go to on Saturday if I can find some contact info and get a press pass. And there's even stuff going on back in Mass where I used to go to stuff, the Art of War going on, Art of Fighting. AFO, whatever that is. I think it's Art of Fighting Organization. But they're having Last Man Standing 3 in Mansfield, Massachusetts at the Holiday Inn, where I've been to a couple fights. It's pretty good setup there. They even have a fight over in England, the UK, and the initials are Fight, or the company is called Fight UK, so the initials are FUK. So, Fuck 3 is going on in England on Sunday. It's kind of funny. There's actually more stuff going on in England on Sunday in MMA than there is in Tokyo, which is usually the one that has Sunday locked up. So check out SureDog.com. Go to BoxRec.com for all the boxing stuff. Sign off early tonight. Next week we are going to work to have two guests, hopefully one from boxing, one from MMA. I know we kind of got more of a hookup now with the MMA guys looking for interviews. And I'll try to get the Robert Guerrero interview over the next week, and that'll be on video, hopefully. So on the blog. Again to Peter Manfredo and Toka there for a great interview. And you know, like I said, I promised that we'd have some boxing guys on for you.
Yeah, thank you.
And we all wish you the best of luck getting over your laryngitis, of course, because we want you to come back next week strong.
Well, I'm going to be the number one guy in this business again.
There you go. All right, well, that's about it for us. Thanks for stopping by and listening, and we'll keep everybody posted on next week's guest. We'll try to get the word out at least a day in advance next time, so we're on the ball.
All right, that sounds good, man. Until next week.
Good night.
All right, later.